Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
There we are. All right, good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 20 of the MV Red Podcast. I'm Michael Metzinger. And Dane is joining me today from on the road. So we have, I think it's been about 3 weeks since our last episode with pollster Rich Barris, which was definitely, I think, one of our top listened episodes. So we're thrilled about that. So I know it seems though we have some new people subscribing on the podcast apps on social media as well. So we want to thank you for that. And before we begin, before I pass it off to Dane, I do want to encourage you, if you're on Facebook or on Twitter tuning in right now, please share and have a watch party. People will certainly enjoy it. So, Dane, how are things going today from wherever you're at in America?
Disclose exactly my location because it's kind of confidential. But I am
that's why I was incognito there.
Yeah, that was really clever. I'm in the Chicago area, the great state of Illinois, or as some like to call it, Illinois. I'm sitting in my hotel room. I'm drinking some water, and I like to drink water to stay healthy, which is why I also just finished an entire slice of key lime pie. And now I have a pretty gnarly stomachache, as the hippies would say. I don't think I've ever used the word gnarly before in a sentence, but yeah. Then you called and said, hey, we're doing an episode of MV Red, and I said, well, I'll have to remote in. We should have just ended the podcast with the Rich Barris episode. That's probably like a high point, right? You can't top that. You got People's Pundit on it, People's _ Pundit on there.
He's
super legit, right? Like we couldn't top that. I think we should have just rolled it up, but you're like, no, the show must go on. And you know, people, this is what I'm amazed by, right? I'm not really the MV Red guy. You are, Michael. You're the heart and soul of this.
You're a critical piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I just rant for an hour. But the Facebook interactions, I think, are really sweet and overwhelming. People genuinely want to hear MV Red. It's a small group, you know, but it's a loyal and dedicated fan base. Like, people kept asking, when are we doing another episode? When are we doing another episode? And for once, I was the holdup. I've had a busy week. But so here we are. We're back. We're in action. Yeah. And, you know, I have no idea what the topics are today. So this is going to be totally fresh and off the cuff. And yeah, let me take another.
No, we may have lost. You know, I'll say one thing: hotel Wi-Fi sometimes isn't the best. So there might be some times tonight where Dane might drop off. But nonetheless, since our last episode, where do I begin in the political world? 2020 has been a complete and utter wreck, and it just continues to throw curveballs at us. So, on our last episode was the night that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had actually passed away. So since then,
political world,
sorry.
No, you're good. So in that period of time, Amy Coney Barrett has been nominated by President Trump to the United States Supreme Court. So that's the first big one. Then there was that, I'll call it a debacle of a debate last Tuesday between Trump and Biden. And then on Friday morning, I woke up to the news that President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump and now a slew of other people in the administration tested positive for COVID-19. And then I'm driving to pick up dinner Friday evening, and I'm listening to Ron Verb. I know, Dane, you're a big fan. And he's breaking in, I think, at 5:20 with the news that President Trump was being airlifted to Walter Reed Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. So a ton has happened in the last 3 weeks. And so I thought it was important to at least get an episode in here. Maybe highlight some of those events over the last few weeks, talk about the VP debate tomorrow. And this kind of overall the state of the election right now, with somewhat of a focus on the state of Ohio, because there has been a big push, I would say, within the last week or so by the Biden campaign to maybe try to make a case that they can win this state. I question it to an extent. So we'll talk about that as well. But before we get too far, my wife did have a request for Dane. She wants to know why the letter E in the Biden-Harris logo is red. So this is definitely a Dane topic. Perfect for you, Dane.
Okay, so I'm super pumped about this. So the Biden-Harris logo, it's Biden and Harris. It's their last names, right? And they have this. They have several variants of the logos. One is the circle with the 2020 on the bottom. Okay, I don't know what kind of font this is. It's a little playful, which is surprising because Biden and Harris aren't really the most playful people. But so they have that circle logo, but then they have the regular, you know, blue text, white background. And you're right. And I'm looking at it. They have for the E. Now, I'm proficient in the English language, or at least I think I am, right? That's my native language. And to me, the E, you make a line, a vertical line down, and then three horizontal lines across. But their E doesn't have a vertical line down. The D is like overlapping it. And the E is red. It's just three red lines. I don't know. I am mystified by this. And this is like a mystery. The more you stare at this, the deeper you get in about these.
Deep in the E
and the Biden E. And the Harris is just Harris. It's really bland. It's literally just her name, Harris. But the Biden E, I don't know. I think, well, visually, it jumps out at you, right? You've got blue on white, and the red E makes it stand out, which is really nice. But I don't know. I'm a little mad that they didn't put the line to connect the three horizontal lines, the vertical line, and make a proper E.
So your wife, Shanley, is in the chat right now, and says the three stripes are symbolic of the American flag.
I never thought of that. That's so smart. That is so smart. That's
really the struggle to get to that point, though. I never would have thought that.
But she's right. She's absolutely right. It's supposed to be the American flag. So I guess after, 4 years of a Biden-Harris administration, there are only, five states left, right? Because you got the three red and the two white. And it's probably like California, New York, Illinois, Nevada for some reason, and like Rhode Island. The rest all get destroyed in like our war with Russia to protect the democratic integrity of Belarus or something stupid like that. I don't know, but I think she's absolutely right. I think it's the American flag. So kudos to Shanley. Wow.
Yes, appreciate the comment, Shanley. My buddy Switka and former classmate at Ursuline High School, as well as a former classmate, Zach Humphreys, are tuning in from North Carolina, so we appreciate them.
Wow.
Tuning in. We're all over.
Wow, we're all over. It's like the Trump campaign. It's all over. No, we'll get there. We'll get there.
But I guess before we talk about Ohio, because we'll segue into that, let's kind of go back, kind of recap the past 2.5-3 weeks. So first, let's briefly talk Amy Coney Barrett. It was a fascinating
thing.
On Twitter, especially, you kind of saw the different factions of the right duking it out over this pick. There were the more populist pick, I'll call them pundits, such as Robert Barnes, who I think does a really good job. He's the political better, sports better as well. He was very high on, I think her name was Barbara Lagoa. She was a Cuban Catholic judge from Florida, and he was very high on her. And there is the other faction, more traditional conservative right, who since the Kavanaugh pick was high on the idea of Amy Coney Barrett being the pick to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg once she had passed away. So ultimately, President Trump sided with Amy Coney Barrett. I think my initial thoughts are I like her. I think he's looking for a fight like Kavanaugh to galvanize the base, maybe galvanize maybe we'll say the religious right a little bit because of how some of the questioning of Amy Coney Barrett a couple years ago for her Court of Appeals seat, how it was against kind of targeted her for her Catholic beliefs. So I like the pick, but again, there's some on the populist right who are not big fans of this pick. Dane, you're keen to this. What are your thoughts on the pick?
Where are the Protestants? Where are the WASPs? So we have a Supreme Court that prior to the death of RBG was literally, I think, and this is shocking, I count this up, there are 9 members of the Supreme Court, 5 of whom are Catholic, 3 of whom are Jewish, and 1 who is a Protestant, Episcopalian. So
who RBG, was Catholic at one point.
Who was Catholic, right? So RBG, Breyer, and I'm trying to remember the
last. Kagan?
Elena Kagan yes. Are all individuals with the Jewish faith. Gorsuch is Episcopalian. And then Roberts, which surprised me. I didn't know he was Catholic. Roberts is Catholic. Alito is Catholic, which isn't surprising because he's Italian. Clarence Thomas is Catholic, which I thought was a little bit surprising.
I believe at one point he was in the seminary, or he was considering studying to be a priest.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know that. And I found that interesting. And gosh, forgive me. Kavanaugh is Catholic. He went to Georgetown.
Yeah, you can't forget that one.
Can't forget that one. And who am I missing? Roberts, Kavanaugh. Leo,
Sotomayor is Catholic.
Sotomayor. Yeah. Yep. She's Catholic as well. So, you know, we lost a Jewish justice, or, you know, I'm not trying to put it crudely, but, and then we're replacing her with a Catholic. And so there will be 6 Catholics on the Supreme Court. Is this, the real question is less, you know, is the religious right taking over? Is the Pope taking back America? You know, America was historically a Protestant country. We are, Protestantism is in our DNA. One of the reasons why in the 19th century, people were rejected or were against Irish and Italian immigration was because of the Catholic influence, right? People were afraid of Catholics coming into the country and overwhelming our historically Protestant worldview. And now the Supreme Court's going to be 6 Catholic members. I just, what is it about Catholics that make them?
We got great judges? Legal minds, Dane.
I think so. In all seriousness, and I'm being a little cheeky here. You know, one thing that's interesting is that the Protestantism in America was historically a Protestant country. And I think everybody should really respect that fact because there's a Protestant worldview that is really the American worldview. And American Catholics, I think, have become more Protestant in their outlook instead of vice versa. But Protestantism has declined globally. And in America, especially, the mainline churches are not what they used to be. The Episcopalians, the Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Lutherans, right? They're all in sharp decline. Now, the evangelicals and the Baptists are relatively strong, and the Mormons, but the rest are all kind of dying off. And you're right that the Catholics have an excellent historical tradition being, you know, in many ways, the founders of Western civilization or the, you know, core part of that story. They look at the world in a very legalistic manner, going back to St. Thomas Aquinas and I'm trying to think of the other one. Who's Augustine? St. Augustine, right? Those are very legal thinkers. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. It's probably not your question at all, is it?
It's fascinating to note the Catholic presence on the Supreme Court, knowing that we've only had one Catholic president in our nation's history, possibly soon to be 2, if the polls are correct with Joe Biden. But it is a fascinating aspect that we could have a Supreme Court with no mainline Protestants, outside of Gorsuch, but Episcopalians are in some ways kind of like Catholic light in some regard. So, but like, you know, not Presbyterian, not Lutheran, what else am I missing here?
Presbyterian, Lutheran, Methodist.
Methodist. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of those other dominant mainline Protestant churches. So It's fascinating, but I think we'll truly see if this pick will pay off for Trump politically. I think ultimately Mitch McConnell will find a way to get it through. Once Mitt Romney said that he was in favor of at least having a vote on the floor, I think Mitt Romney's probably a fan of Amy Coney Barrett, because again, I think she pleases some of the more traditional conservative Republican voters. I do believe that, and I believe her hearings start next week. Dan, does that sound right? Tentatively, I think they're supposed to start next week, but this whole COVID mess that might change things up. So, but I think Trump's taking it from the perspective of optics wise. If the Democrats go after her, especially for her faith, I think maybe he thinks it will hurt them, especially in maybe the more Midwestern parts of the country. Because if you look at her family, I think what she has five kids. Is it five?
Seven.
Okay. Two are adopted from Haiti. And then she also has a special needs child as well. But yeah, I think optics wise, you know, you look at her family, beautiful big Catholic family, kind of the old school Catholic families that had, you know, my family or my dad's family had. My dad has nine siblings, so he's one of those big Catholic families as well. So it's kind of that old school Catholic family aspect. And I think she will find a way to get through. She will. I do think she'll get through. The question I think becomes whether it's before the election or not. The other issue is for Trump getting this through is there's going to be a lot of people voting throughout the month of October. And if he's looking for some last-ditch effort to maybe sway some voters, it might be a little too late, just being that early voting and absentee voting has really kicked in now across the country.
So I have some problems, right? I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. Okay. The people that voted for Trump did not vote for Trump necessarily because of overturning Roe versus Wade, right? So
nope, I agree.
The thing about Amy is – I think I've watched some videos of her. She's clearly a highly intelligent person. She's well qualified. I think she would make an excellent jurist. And you never really know to their point. But I have two issues, right? People kind of are a lot of conservatives or traditional conservatives are kind of, you know, rewriting the Trump victory. Trump didn't win by being a Mitt Romney supply side or traditionalist conservative. Trump won the Midwest by kind of being, you know, more of a moderate in some respects, more extreme in other respects. I don't want to say he was the moderate candidate because that's not true. But if you look at polls of Rust Belt voters, they saw Trump as a more moderate guy than past Republican candidates. And what won Trump the election was the hard position on immigration, which people forget about, trade, right? Ending the foreign wars. These type of non-traditional Republican positions, that's what won him states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, etc. So people kept saying, well, Amy is ACB is against abortion and she's going to overturn Roe versus Wade. I don't think they have the votes to overturn Roe versus Wade, even with her on it. I think like a Gorsuch or a Roberts would not be in favor of that. And I think it should be overturned, by the way. I think that it should be left. I think abortion policy should be fundamentally left to the states. I don't think it should be a federal issue.
That would be my take on the whole issue of Roe versus Wade. If aspects of it were overturned, then ultimately I would think it becomes a state issue. And it becomes
totally
decide.
A state issue. Yeah.
So, and I think that's reasonable because there's clearly more liberal states that would be willing to proceed with maybe more or less restrictive abortion laws than maybe.
Oh, in the liberal states, you can just kill the baby, you know, 6 months after it's born. They have legalized infanticide, right? Anybody that would defend third trimester abortion, I think it's absolutely a abominable policy, right? I mean, you can have your debates on abortion as a whole, but like the Democrats have gone so far to the left where they literally celebrate child murder, and it's sickening. It's totally sickening. What? So, you know, I don't want to get into it. Well, the point here is that I think, and I didn't mean to cut you off, Michael, but
no, you're good.
The immigration is the core issue. Okay, immigration is, you know, you might be able to overturn Roe versus Wade today, but unless we control immigration in this country, in 20 years, whatever victories you have, they're going to be like sandcastles. They're just going to be washed away by the tide both legal and illegal immigration, because the Democrats, by opening the borders, are importing a new electorate that is fundamentally more aligned with the left-wing view of the world than the traditional historical American view of the world, okay? So to me, the most crucial issue is immigration, and I don't think that Amy is strong on immigration. I don't know that for a fact, but I've heard some rumblings on the right-wing Twitter sphere that she's weak on immigration. So I support her. I wish her all the best. But my big concern, and that people should note this, is that she might be soft on cracking down on immigration. So that's my point on Amy. That's it.
But for the, I guess for the same people, they should be consider themselves lucky if she does get through to have that more of a stable. Because I do think Roberts is I think he it's kind of like a teeter totter. He's trying to keep it level as much as possible, and maybe sometimes I do question if he's just ruling a certain way just to keep the peace in the country, which I don't like that aspect, but I get the idea behind it. You don't want a completely political court one way or the other, but I think even if she goes through, I don't think it's a lock for the right to expect rulings to always go their way. It's just the way it is. So we'll see how that pans out over the next week. Moving on, then let's talk about the debate. I think the one woman on CNN referred to it as a shit show. It was a struggle for somebody like me to watch. Even take my just viewing it from the perspective of somebody who loves politics, I struggle to watch that. I don't care like what side I don't care that I want Trump to win and I want him to do well, but it was just a struggle to watch just the constant interrupting back and forth, the name calling. It wasn't good in my eyes. And I think Trump's biggest issue from it is I think he interrupted too much. And by doing so, it actually aided Biden, because I think Biden was due for a few gaffes there. And I think Trump just constantly kept interrupting him and could have just let the guy talk. And I think he was bound to make a mistake. But I think that's Trump's biggest issue. I thought if he would have just like refrained from that and just focus on the policies, I think he could have really beat him solidly in the debate. But he just couldn't help himself after there was some interrupting right in the probably in the first 10 minutes, and just kind of went south from there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think Trump was like at an 11 or maybe a 12 on a 10 scale. And if he would have just turned it down to 7 or 8, I think he would have won that handily. He actually had some good answers, right? And Biden was just not good, but Biden's not goodness was overshadowed by Trump just, you know, attacking like a attack dog. And I was like, dude, chill out, right? Like, Biden was like, oh, well, back in 74 with Carter, and he was just wandering around and Trump would interrupt him. And it was like Trump was taking off the focus from Biden. Biden is, you know, he's clearly aged. There are severe problems there. You watch him in that debate, he looks kind of shaky. And he didn't really give any concrete answers. And Trump just couldn't shut up for like 5 minutes. So I think the debate was a big net negative for Trump. I don't think it won him many votes.
No,
and I think he has to be. I think he can be a little aggressive and a little bit Trumpy, right? He actually gave. This is the irony. You watch the debate. He gave decent answers to some of the questions. And it's not like he had no idea what he was talking about. He actually, you know, from being the president for 4 years, he has more knowledge of the issues than he did in 2016. So he could have done well. And I think if he turned it down a bit, he would have done very well. And I think most people wanted to say that he won, but he was just such a dickhead, pardon my language, that they're just like, F you, right? They're like, I don't even care if he won. That was horrible. So that debate, I think, was bad. It was really, really bad. And look, who does Trump need to win over? He needs to win over the suburban folks, right? And I think the suburban folks, they genuinely want to vote for him, right? But they want a good excuse. But he keeps, you know, over acting like a total jerk. If he would have just chilled out, right, he would have been fine. Because Biden is really not that. The media has kind of memed Biden into being this like super likable guy, but he's really not, right? If you think about like what Biden has done and what he represents, it's pretty horrific. Like I'm willing to say that Biden is a worse person than Donald Trump. And I think that you could make no, I'm serious. Like, how many people did Trump kill in the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war? Like, Trump never started a war in the Middle East that cost $1 trillion in treasure and like 5,000 American lives and countless Iraqi lives, right? Biden did that. Every horrible policy that the federal government has done, which the media and the, you know, the centrists thought was smart policy, Biden's had his name to it. NAFTA, TPP, admitting China to the WTO, the Iraq war, the Afghanistan war, the Syrian war, you know, the Libyan war. Biden was like, let's not get Osama bin Laden. He didn't want them to do that. So he's killed more people, or he's been involved in the deaths of more people than Trump could ever dream of. But because he's senile and like Irish Catholic, he gets a pass. I don't get it.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. We have some random somebody on Periscope chiming in. We're going to talk about the polls momentarily in a little later on in this episode. But yeah, I agree a lot of what you said. I think a lot of suburban people, I think people really want to find a path to maybe so quote unquote justify their means of voting for Trump, especially those in the suburbs. But I just think he did himself no favors. Now I will say this: the vice presidential debate is tomorrow evening. I went back and I did watch some of the Pence-Kaine debate from 2016. Pence is pretty – he's a polished politician. I think he at one point – and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. I thought at one point in time he had a radio show.
He did.
So you could tell he's very polished. He knows how to say correct answers, just the right things. Sometimes he talks a little too much, but I think it'll be a completely different kind of debate tomorrow. And I'll be curious to watch. I don't know if it's really going to have much sway for people, but it should be an important debate. You know, we just had our president in the hospital with COVID. Now he appears to have recovered, thankfully. And then you have a 78-year-old on the flip side on the Democrat ticket. So you have two mid to late 70s candidates who are going to be running the country with the most stressful job, or arguably one of the most stressful jobs in the world. So it is an important role. So I will be paying attention to that tomorrow evening. And then I think the next debate is sometime next week. And if Trump tests negative for COVID, we'll see how that goes. But I'm hoping he doesn't actually believe some of these unscientific Twitter polls that show that he won the thing, because I deep down I don't think he's the type of person who's going to portray himself as the victor. But hopefully behind the scenes they realize that it wasn't good for him. And like you said, Dave, he's not far off from doing well in one of these debates. He just needs to learn to tone it down and maybe have a couple of decent answers ready to go, and maybe hit Biden on the idea of defunding the police, or why aren't you telling the American people who might be on your Supreme Court list, those types of things, and really hit him on those things. But he just seems to be missing the boat on that. And it doesn't hurt to have a couple of those ready to go and maybe try to see if Biden stumbles. So we'll see how it goes. Still about a little less than a month out was the first debate. And remember, 4 years ago, after the first debate, was the Access Hollywood tape. And
oh, yeah.
A lot of the poll, and I was guilty of it as anybody else. And then I watched the second debate, which I thought Trump actually at the time was a mess. And I could make an argument the second debate in 2016 was worse than this one in some regard. Maybe it was a little bit more personal at the time. But I went back and I watched that a couple weeks ago, and Trump wasn't that bad at it. I mean, some of the personal stuff put aside, but he actually was not a bad debater, I would say, in that debate. And at that point in time, there's plenty of people who wanted Trump to drop off the ticket and just have Pence run. And 3 weeks later, the guy became the president of the United States. So I do push back on this idea that just because he may have lost this debate that he's toast. Historically speaking, the incumbent has fared poorly in the first debate, but I don't think he fared poorly for not being ready to go. I think it was just he was way too aggressive. And I think if you just turn down a little bit, he has some room to – he can make up for it in the next debate.
I think that's all fair. I think that's totally fair. I don't know. We'll see. He just needs to tone it down and he can win. He needs a win. He desperately needs a win at this point.
Yes. Yeah. So while we're talking about wins and all that, so I think it's important to put in context. I just mentioned 2016, the Access Hollywood tape. There was a couple polls out in the last 2 days. So there's the NBC poll that showed Trump down by 14 points nationally. And then this morning, CNN released a poll that showed Trump down 16 points nationally. I don't know what these pollsters are doing. Here's my issue with all of this. There's no repercussions for these pollsters. They could just throw this nonsense out there.
and their lies must be punished. Michael Metzinger.
But like, who's paying for these polls? The media. The media does not like Trump. They clearly want him to lose. To me, these are nothing more than narrative-driven polls. If they feel confident with these numbers, then put your money behind it. I mean, do you really think that Trump is going to lose by 16 points nationally? When was the last time anybody lost by – was it Reagan? What were Reagan's victories?
No, Reagan's weren't even that decisive.
They were decisive in the Electoral College.
Yeah, I think it was Reagan was 59 to whoa, okay, so 19-point win in his reelection, 59 to 41.
But he won 49 out of 50 states. Points,
yeah.
So how on earth can these pollsters justify these national numbers, yet you have ABC who comes out and shows Trump up 4 in Florida. You show tight races in Arizona, in North Carolina, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio. There's a complete and utter disconnect, especially when Biden is campaigning in Pennsylvania. He seems to be hitting that one hard. It's not believable. And before I pass it off to you, Dane, I'm just going to throw some things at you. Some polls from 2016. Please, right after Access Hollywood. NBC had Hillary up 14, ABC Hillary up 12, CBS Clinton up 11, AP Hillary 13, Monmouth 12, Atlantic 12, USA Today 10, CNBC 10. So what is that? Eight pollsters all had double digits about a month out from the 2016 election, and Trump still won. So I think a lot of this, especially with people going to vote right now, maybe to rally the left in some way and try to suppress Republican turnout. But if 2016 was a barometer, Trump voters are going to come out and vote. They are much more enthusiastic. The enthusiasm on the Democrat side is a pure hatred of Trump. I don't know. I have yet to find anybody who is going to the polls on the Democrat side because they like Joe Biden. It's clearly an utter hatred of Trump. And that's what's driving the left to the polls. But I think we had Rich Barris on the last episode, who was outstanding. And I've been watching this show, continue to watch the show every day. And his big thing is, if you look at these polls, they're just assuming massive surge in turnout. I think the New York Times pollster, his name's Nate Cohn, C-O-H-N, he said something, I think, in their Arizona poll that 30% of the people in their likely voter sample are new voters. It's just, something doesn't really make sense. And can you justify that? I don't know. We'll find out. But with restrictions around, and we'll see if people actually return absentee ballots. But I just want to push back on this idea that Trump's toast, because 4 years ago, the same thing happened virtually at the same stage of the election, about three or four weeks out.
No, he's not toast, but he is behind. And he just did a horrible decision today to not do additional stimulus and to end the negotiations. I think you're right. Like, the idea that he's losing by 15 points is laughable. I think it's closer to 5, maybe a little bit higher, given what's been going on recently. And the reason, or the sanity check on this, is just look at where people are campaigning and what states are in play and where they're putting in advertisements. The Trump campaign just canceled advertisements in Iowa and Ohio, which are absolutely must-win states. And I think that they know that Trump is leading there, or is likely going to win there. And Biden is campaigning heavily in Pennsylvania, Minnesota, these type of states, right? So if this were a 14-point race, Biden would be campaigning in Indiana, Kansas,
Missouri, Montana, Missouri, states that Obama Missouri either won or came close to winning.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Montana. That's a good one. Yep, Missouri. So I think that those polls are – they're just absolutely laughable, and they're just silly. I think it's – I still think it's a tight race, and I still think it's winnable for Trump. But the point I have to make is that Trump won by being a populist. He didn't win by being a conservative. And a lot of Republicans, this is difficult to hear, but it's absolutely crucial. Like, the debt doesn't matter, okay? It literally doesn't matter at this point. And the idea that Trump just canceled further negotiations on the stimulus bill, he should be – this is the way Trump wins. He should be the guy that wants to get you a $1,200 check. And yeah, Nancy Pelosi's putting a bunch of stuff in this, and he's going to stand firm against that. But at the end of the day, he's the guy that wants to get you Trump bucks, right? That's how he wins, and he needs to be triangulating against Nancy and trying to get moderate Democrats over to vote with him to pass a stimulus. Because if he doesn't pass a stimulus, I don't think he can win this election. Like, I think it needs to happen. There needs to be another stimulus payment. And he's inviting losers like I'm trying to think of the name of the guy. He's a right wing guy, Stephen Moore. Okay. Stephen Moore, the legendary Art Laffer, right? These guys, this is not the 80s where, you know, we're not facing 17% inflation, right? This is entirely different economic conditions than what Ronald Reagan faced when he took office. And they're pulling out the same supply side economics plan that's gonna – it's not gonna win. It's not gonna win. Nobody cares about – well, I defeated the stimulus payment because I wanted to protect against a high deficit, and I wanted to protect the debt. Nobody cares at this point, right? People just want to get the economy moving again. So I don't know. I feel like the polls are wrong, but the polls are right in the sense that Trump is losing. And here's the other thing that really – the one thing I just can't sleep at night because of this. Go to Real Click Politics and look at 2016 and look at the average, right? And even when there were polls like Hillary's 1,000 points ahead, Hillary has every single vote in the known universe, right? Trump has negative votes. All these ridiculous polls were coming out. If you look at the aggregate, the Real Clear Politics aggregate of Trump versus Hillary, there's a lot of volatility. It's like Americans didn't like either of them, and we were just, going any, mini money, mo. But Trump would win, he'd be in the lead, and then Hillary would be in the lead, and then Trump would be in the lead, and then Hillary would be the lead. And there was that volatility. So even though there were these like 15-point Hillary leads, Trump would be in the lead in between that. But now you've got a you go to the 2020 Real Clear Politics average, Biden versus Trump, and Biden consistently has this like 6-point, 5-point blue lead that never dips. And that's why I'm very worried.
No, I think it's fair, and I think that's an accurate statement, because I do follow a lot of people on the right who just because it happened in 2016 doesn't mean it's going to happen again in 2020, where Trump defies the polls. And you bring up a good point. Biden has had a consistent lead. It was probably, I want to say, when we were pretty down on Trump, when we had the young Republicans on, we talked about maybe Trump narrowing it to like a 4, maybe 5-point national race. And I think for sure if he gets it to 4, I feel confident that he can win the electoral college.
I do too.
5 is going to be iffy, but I think if he's not far off, because remember, if you actually look at the 4-person race polls, which again, somewhat matters to an extent, his deficit's about 6.5 points the last I checked. I think that was this morning or yesterday. So he's not far off. I think, again, it's a combination. I think he needs to do well in the debate. Maybe hope for something good come out of the Supreme Court here. We'll see. And I don't know. Maybe hope for a Biden gaffe in a debate. I don't know if that's going to do it at this point. But something to energize the base right now even further, or maybe try to win over some of those undecided. Because what's interesting is in some of these state polls that still come out, or even one of the national polls out today showed Trump winning independents by 3, yet down like 10 nationwide. And again, there's this disconnect where they're assuming a massive surge in Democrat voters. We'll see. It could certainly happen, but I agree. I would probably put Trump's odds. I would have said before the debate, maybe closer to 45%, which is probably more in line with like the betting markets, the predicted market, which was by state. I'm probably closer to 40% now, but there's still room for him to grow. There's upside there. There's still time. He has the enthusiasm edge, which is critical. He has, and because of that, you know his voters are going to come out, which is important. So there's still time. But I think the key is going to be getting it under 5 points nationally.
Agreed. And I also think there are some shy Trump voters. I think the polls do skew a little bit towards the Democrats. So I think if it's like a 5 points in the polls, it'll be 3 points nationally. And that's a Trump electoral victory. So I don't think he needs to be winning the popular vote. But he's got to do better than we're. I actually think he narrowed it. I think he was really behind in June. I think it narrowed all the way through September, and then I think it kind of has reversed lately.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Real quick, I do want to mention this because I thought this was a fascinating question. So Rich Barrett just did a poll of the state of Florida, had Trump up, I think, 1.6 points. He's from Florida. He feels confident Trump's going to win Florida. And if Trump's going to win Florida, there's no way the nation's 16 points to the left of Florida. If anything, maybe you could say it's within five. So I feel like if Trump's up 1 to 2 points in Florida, you would think he's probably down nationwide 5, maybe 6. But there's the last question of this poll, and it's critical that I mention it's the last question. So I don't want people to think it's an agenda-driven poll, because if you could read his poll questions, there's quite a few. But he asked the question, do you believe there is a significant number of shy voters who do not want to share they are voting for Donald Trump in the poll? So 1,002 responses, 64% said yes. He also asked, do you think some might be uncomfortable sharing their political opinions with pollsters? And it was something like 35% said yes, they would feel somewhat or greatly, really uncomfortable. So we'll see what to make of that. But I do believe there is this shy Trump voter, which I think you touched on. I think there's people out there who would like to vote for Trump who are maybe not there yet, but could be there. Or are there and just are afraid to admit it. I think there's something there, and we'll see. I don't know. Does it count for more than 1 or 2%? We shall see. But again, we're talking a lot about the national polls, but it's the Electoral College that ultimately decides the president of the United States.
Yes. Yeah, it is the Electoral College. I know a lot of people hate that, but it is. I like it because I live in Ohio.
So, and then I don't know if you could see my screen, but I'm going to share, and I think you and I are on the same page, and we did this a week ago, but I was going to toss up on the screen what I had as the Electoral College at this point in time, based on listening to Rich and just my overall thoughts. And it has Biden 258 to Trump 247. Cool. And let me just briefly explain this. Ultimately, I know there's some movement in Iowa and Ohio right now, and we'll talk about Ohio in a second. I'm not buying it. I think Trump will ultimately win Iowa by probably less than Ohio. I think Ohio will go Trump maybe by 5, maybe 6 points. Iowa probably a little less. I think Trump ultimately will hold on to North Carolina. He'll ultimately hold on to Florida. The key for Trump is going to be a state like Arizona, which I'm not sure what to make, in Pennsylvania, two states where polling hasn't been great for Republicans this cycle, but voter registration trends have been pretty positive for Republicans in both states. To me, those are going to be the two states. I think Trump's going to have a tough time in a Michigan, although some polls do show under 3 points there, so it's possible. Wisconsin sounds a little tough. Minnesota, I know it might be a bit of a reach, and maybe if this race was closer nationally, I think maybe Trump could get there. But I ultimately think it's going to come down to like a state like Arizona and Pennsylvania. So what are your thoughts, Dane, on this? I wanted to share this and just see what, you know, people thought.
That is actually my map. Here's a couple more. There's some good news out of Maine second district, because Maine splits the Electoral College vote. So I would make that pink. The little stripe in the upper northeast. So add another. That's a single vote for Trump. I think Nevada is actually looking kind of weak, surprisingly, for the Democrats. Yes. I think a lot of the local Democratic governor in Nevada has done a pretty poor job, and there's a lot of discontentment. And there are rumors that the blue collar unions for the workers in the casinos and that might not turn out the vote. So I think that I would put Nevada as a toss-up as well. I think that's one that could surprisingly flip. I'm not being overly optimistic here. I do think it's just kind of non-list.
And I'll say this real quick. I don't want to butt in, but in Nevada, there's a reporter, Vegas, whatever. Ralston Reports, I think is his name. He's been pretty good. I'll give him credit. I don't agree with his tweets usually, but he's pretty good about identifying the trends there. And it's interesting. Nevada might be one of the only states where Republicans actually typically poll better than the results come in for some reason or another. But watch the early returns, early vote totals come in by party there. That'll really determine whether that state's reachable or not. 2 years ago, the polls looked pretty good for the Republicans. Ultimately, they lost. And you could see it in the early vote totals coming in on a day-by-day basis. Because outside of Vegas, there's not much population. Reno, Carson City, maybe is Elko a city in Nevada? Not much else. So Republicans have to keep it within single digits in Las Vegas just to have a chance there, because they run it up in much of the other parts of the state. But we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. So my map's your map. We'll see. I think he'll bounce back. I think he's dropped. I think he'll bounce back. I think it's a volatile race, but I am worried about the stimulus thing. I think the stimulus thing is the most important thing he needs to do. He needs to send Trump bucks. Okay. He needs to send Trump bucks to people. It's crucial that people get their Trump bucks. Yes, we're literally buying votes. Yes, it is. It is totally hypocritical, but it absolutely needs done. So I would do whatever it takes to get the Trump bucks out. That is,
I agree,
crucial.
I will say this. He did tweet this evening at 7 o'clock in response to a CNBC tweet. He said true. And it's, I think, the Fed chair. Is it Jerome Powell? Yeah. So he said that Congress needs to come in with additional funding or something along those lines. And he said true. So I feel like on the surface, this might be a political ploy by him. I think the optics look awful right now. But yeah. If I were him, I would come out and say, hey, what do we mostly agree on? We agree on direct payments to the people. I think by and large, some on the Republican Senate don't. But I think by and large, people across both parties support that. Just do a standalone. Start with that. Throw that out there. And put it on the Democrats at this point. Say, if you don't want this, you're gonna go down with it. But something like that I, like you said, forget the spending aspect. It's a populist idea. People want them, and I think you probably can make an argument right now that in some aspects it would be helpful in certain parts. I think restaurants are struggling right now. You see movie theaters closing down again. I think that's what Trump needs to do. So I feel like this is not the last of it. Trump's got a goofy way of thinking. I'll say that. And I would not be surprised within a couple of days if something comes of that.
Yeah. I mean, we need more. Listen, I'm not a socialist by any means. For God's sake, I'm an investment banker. I've worked in banking my entire life, right? I am a capitalist. But I think it's hard to make the argument that capitalism as it stands today, global capitalism, is fundamentally broken. And it doesn't work for the little guy. We've gone through two major recessions where, you know, big companies get bailed out and the people are left holding the bag and screwed. And that's not necessarily a left-wing critique. You could be a right-wing person and feel like that it's unfair. And I think a lot of big companies are actually harmful to the health of the nation. But, you know, just because it's a private enterprise doesn't mean it's inherently good, right? Doesn't mean it's inherently evil either. It just depends. So we've bailed out businesses. We've kept, you know, various businesses afloat given the COVID restrictions. And now it's time, I think, to give the little guy a check, you know, just to keep him afloat. Given that, and this isn't somewhere where somebody's being lazy and they don't want to work. This is something where the government said to people, you cannot work, right? You can't sell your labor in the market. I think that the government owes the people restitution. So there has to be some stimulus payment of some sort. I keep coming back to that. But anyways, what else you got on the docket, Michael?
Well, I guess a couple other things real quick, because I did go back and I think it's important to look at trends between certain states. And Dane, you might be able to see this on the spreadsheet. I don't know if you have it open. But what I did was I looked back at the past at PA, Florida, and Ohio. Three states. Obviously, I live in Ohio. I know Florida fairly well just from kind of – I travel down there, it seems like, every year. And
why?
Well, why don't you go to Florida?
For either work or for vacationing, which I love.
Why
the
would you
Florida.
Vacation in Florida?
Oh, I love Florida. Naples, Florida is beautiful. Huge, huge Republican area. Collier County.
I hear a nice thing about Naples. Yeah, Naples is supposed to be really nice.
Yeah, it's a very wealthy part, probably one of the wealthiest parts of the country, but for sure in Florida. But beautiful part of the state. Anyhow. So I fairly know I'm not great with Florida, but and then Pennsylvania, you could kind of see trends there. There's really maybe 3-4 parts of the state to follow. But anyways, long story short, I looked at the margins between PA and Florida and PA and Ohio. And up until last election, Florida and PA were about 5 points apart. So PA was about 4 or 5 points more Democrat. It was less than a half a point. And then PA and Ohio, it's about 5.5 points more Democratic than Ohio. So just keep that in the back of your mind, folks, when you see polls. So if you see like Ohio Trump plus 5, then you should probably think that Pennsylvania is probably Biden maybe up 1 or 2 points. So kind of think it doesn't always work that way. It's not like in a vacuum where it's always going to move a certain way. But just kind of keep that historically speaking in the back of your minds, because these trends are – do sometimes to repeat themselves. So I just wanted to mention that. And then I got one more for you, Dane, in terms of graphics. So let me show you one more I have. So much is being said right now about the state of Ohio. It seems like the Biden folks are trying to make a push here for some reason. Maybe they see it. There are in polling in Ohio has not been good the last few cycles. Rich Barris likes to mention that Richard Cordray is not the governor of Ohio, despite the last few polls having him up 4 points. There, actually, if you go back, I don't think you're going to find maybe a poll, maybe one poll you're going to find where DeWine's up within the last 60 days of that election. And he ended up winning by 4 points. And Trump, the margin for polling in 2016 for Trump was plus like 2. He won by 8. So it was off 6 points then. It was off 8 points in 2018. For some reason, it's a tough state to poll. But I'm just looking at it from this perspective of how you're going to – where the race is going to go in Ohio. You might see some movement like in a Delaware County north of Franklin County. I just say that because it's outside of Columbus, which is trending a little bit more blue. Maybe more highly educated, that white suburban vote that might be trending a little bit away from Trump. I see that possibly moving a little bit more blue, and maybe Hamilton County a little bit. The key in the state to determine whether Trump's going to win and how much he's going to win is going to be Northeast Ohio. He did very well in parts of Northeast Ohio. He won big in Stark County, which is the home, Canton, Ohio. Then, you know, obviously he won Trumbull County, just, you know, Dane's home county, and yeah, then did well, you know, Lake County, Geauga, Ashtabula, he flipped, I believe, and then some other counties along the lakeshore. But really, I think maybe they're seeing something in the polling in Northeast Ohio, because I feel like the movement in the other parts of the state is not going to be enough to offset an 8-point deficit that you could say maybe Biden's starting with just compared to 2016. So I kind of marked that on this map. So, Dane, what are your thoughts on Ohio?
Oh, well, I think Ohio is going to go Trump. I have little doubt. I think it's the Missouri. Somebody, I don't know who said that to me. Somebody said that Ohio is the new Missouri, and I think that's right. It's a state that was a swing state, was trending redder and redder. And the reason why is because the Northeast area, which was blue, is going redder and redder. And you know, there's some downside to that, right? Maybe not downside, but the fact is that the population in Ohio is aging. And as voters get older, they tend to vote more right wing. And I think that's what's happening in Northeast Ohio. And the population has kind of migrated away. So the population that you're left with is older, it's whiter. It's ironically, the area that used to be fairly urbanized is becoming more rural. Even the urban areas are becoming kind of rural. And as a result, it's getting redder. And then the result is that there are really not enough blue votes. You've got Toledo, Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. Cincinnati's kind of blue, but it's not super blue. Same with Columbus. Cleveland is very, very blue. But, you know, one very, very blue city is not enough. And the state is just becoming a red state over time. I'm completely believing that. I think Pennsylvania is the Ohio of 15 to 20 years from now. And I think Michigan as well, and Wisconsin and that, those states will become redder. But I don't know if it's there yet, right? It's trending redder. Pennsylvania is really the state to watch. And it's trending redder because Allegheny and the area around Allegheny, it's a working class area, is getting redder. It's Pittsburgh is blue. There's a big communist core in Pittsburgh, ironically, but the suburbs around it are centered around the universities. But the areas around Pittsburgh are getting redder. And there's really Erie County is another one. Erie is a kind of like the Youngstown of Pennsylvania that's getting red. So there you have Philadelphia, which I guess would be their Cleveland, which is very, very blue.
Cleveland on steroids with the vote that they get out of that city.
Yeah. But I don't know if it's there yet. I honestly don't know. It's really hard to poll. Rich Barris, one of the things he said that was, you know, there's a lot of population in between the two major cities that's hard to poll. And whether or not those people turn out, you know, determines whether or not the state goes red or stays blue. But don't forget, they went pretty hard blue in 2018 and they elected Tom Wolf, who's a fairly liberal governor. So I don't know. I'm very nervous about Pennsylvania. I'm not worried about Ohio. I think Ohio is going to vote for Trump. I'm worried about Pennsylvania.
So you had mentioned about Ohio, like Cincinnati, still the Cincinnati metro is very Republican. If you, and here's how I look at the state of Ohio and why it's difficult for the Democrats to win here. All the blue votes in Cincinnati are completely offset by the two counties to the north, immediately to the north and immediately to the east. And then some of you count a county to the northeast. So that's a wash right there. Then you look at Toledo, probably those five counties right around Toledo pretty much offset all of that vote. And then you got Cleveland and Akron. They net maybe 350, 400,000 votes there. But there are still, it's important to note, Trump won 80 of the 88 counties. And some of those counties, like Columbiana, it's a more rural county just to our south. Trump net 20 or 19,000 votes there in one rural county. And there are some counties in the state that Trump won by 80, almost 80% margins, like huge, huge margins, especially in Western Ohio. And there's just too that red, you know, in some states you see some of that red and there's not a huge population, but in many ways you can, in theory, estimate maybe Trump netting between 8 to 10,000 in a lot of those red counties. They might be small, but when they go 75-25, they add up quick and it just offsets the vote in Cleveland. And that's why it's important for the Democrats, if they want to win this state moving forward, they're going to have to somehow win back those working class voters in Northeast Ohio. And then some of those counties that are dark red on this map along the river were once pretty reliably blue counties. Now Athens is just blue just because of Ohio University, but they lost those voters and it just makes the state much more difficult to win statewide. Probably the best map would be to look at the 2018 gubernatorial race where DeWine won by 4. You still see some blue in Northeast Ohio, more blue in Northeast Ohio, but it's a light blue. It's not a dark blue. It's not 60% margins in Trumbull and Mahoney. It's more in like the low 50s, something along those lines. And that's kind of where I see the state right now. So I would probably put Trump up 4 or 5 points there. But you mentioned PA. What's interesting is on Rich Barris' show, he's talked about Erie and how that's a county, Erie County, Erie, PA. Actually, interesting enough, the third largest city in Pennsylvania. It's Obama won it. And he's showing Trump still up, I think, 15 or 16 points there. So that leads me to believe if that part of Pennsylvania is still that far red for Trump, that Northeast Ohio is going to be tough for the Democrats to make significant inroads. They might make a little bit, perhaps, but I don't think it's going to be enough. But I think the encouraging thing for Republicans in the state of Pennsylvania are the voter registration trends across the board. And I think part of it just might be the fact that COVID's taking place and the Republicans have still gone after voters. For voter registration purposes, where Democrats really haven't. So we shall see. I think the big county, and Rich mentioned it on her last show, is Bucks County, that in 20, and I will share this on my monitor here if I could figure that out here momentarily. I'm going to share. Give me 1 second, folks. Chrome. Where are we at here? I think this is what I'm trying to get.
Pennsylvania is such a weird state. I've never been able to figure it out. Culturally, it's very different to Ohio.
Yeah.
I just don't feel comfortable in that state. They have something, you know, the Pennsylvanians are very arrogant when it comes to the Ohioans. They look down upon us as rednecks and that, which is just completely inaccurate because Cleveland is, you know, for a city of its size per capita on a cultural basis, punches well above its weight. And Ohio is a, you know, it's just very much a median state, right? It's kind of right there in the middle. But the one thing that Pennsylvania has, and I'll turn it back over to you, but it's something that's called the Pittsburgh toilet, which is just totally disgusting, right? So their houses are all built into the hills, like hobbit homes. And they have in the basement, so imagine like a two-story house, but the basement is you can access it via the front. And then when you come in there, you walk. I mean, how barbaric is this, right? Like normally in most civilizations and cultures, when you come into someone's home, you know, they do some sort of ritual of hospitality to say, you know, like welcome, you know, there's a chair or a couch or a rug or something like that. In Pennsylvania, because there are barbaric, fundamentally barbaric people, you walk into the basement and you're greeted with a toilet. But the toilet doesn't, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, you might know this better than I, but the toilet has no
covering. This is all new to me, folks.
This is real. Search Pittsburgh toilet, right? The toilet is totally exposed. And you can just, it's in your basement. Search it. It just came up on Wikipedia. It's just a toilet. There's no privacy. It's just a toilet in the basement. And you walk in. And it's just totally disgusting. I don't know how else to say it. So, and I wouldn't, I don't believe in punching down. I don't believe in being mean to people who are different than you, but Pennsylvanians are so nasty to Ohioans, and yet they have toilets just freestanding in their basements. Now I shudder to think what they do if they just use the restroom and defecate and urinate, and you know, with you know full exposure of their families in Pennsylvania. I don't know, but look up Pittsburgh potty. I guess it is Pittsburgh
toilet. Brother Matthew about this.
Yes, it's horrific. Anyways. So we'll switch back over to the election analysis, but I really hate people from Pennsylvania that look down on Ohio. I don't hate Pennsylvanians, right? They can't help that. But there's no reason to look down on Ohio when you have toilets exposed.
We're like siblings. We're similar states. They're slightly bigger population-wise, but we got a lot of – some aspects, the working class aspects are similar between the two states. So real quick with Pennsylvania. So like – Dana mentioned, you have Allegheny County, Pittsburgh. But if you, again, you could just offset their vote pretty quickly. So they net about 112,000 or what, 108,000 votes there quickly. If you just look around these three counties, you completely offset. So the key here, though, is, and this is the crazy part, look at how many votes they net in Philadelphia County. An absurd number of votes in one county alone. So again, you see a lot of red here. There's a lot of small counties, especially in the northern part of the state. It's still interesting. Like you see them like netting some significant number of votes here. What is that? You know, almost 90,000 there, and then what? Well over 400,000 there. So the Republicans are in a hole in much of the rest of the state. And if you remember 2016 election night, Dane, this was the part of the vote that came in early. And for much of the night, it was just Clinton up 12 points, then 10 points, then 8. And then it just seemed like, as the other states, it was like a domino effect. And before you know it, it was like midnight or 1 a.m. And they got all the votes cast, and Trump just magically falls ahead. But it's a very interesting state. But the county that Rich Barry says to watch on election night is going to be Bucks County, which Clinton won by less than a point in 2016, that he showed Trump maybe up 2 points when he did the Rust Belt poll, and he is going to be polling Pennsylvania over the next week. So it's going to be really interesting to see his results there. But again, in a lot of these counties, Bucks County, Allegheny County, Erie County included, a lot of these counties, registration-wise, it's trended favorably for Republicans. Again, is it going to be enough? I don't know. This is one state that, again, I give Trump, 40% odds, so I would have to give it to Biden right now, maybe by 2 or 3 points, something along those lines. Hopefully it's less, but just this is the county to watch, but watch the margins in Philadelphia County as well. To net that many votes in one county is absurd.
As we do this episode, Trump is on a retweeting spree. You should tweet the episode to Trump. Maybe he'll retweet us. We'll get like a billion viewers. My problem. So I retweet it to, if you can, retweet it to Mr. Trump.
I will.
My problem with the registration. So there's a lot of registration that is actually very encouraging for Republicans. And this has been kind of floating on the internet for the past couple of days. Florida, Arizona, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, I think Wisconsin, Republicans are all massively outpacing Democrats in registrations, which sounds good, right? Because it's like they're – and it's not just like, oh, 500 to, you know, 450. It's 1,000, you know, point gaps in terms of voter registrations. But the issue is I don't know if these are actually truly new Republican voters or if they're Democrats or independents who have voted Republican for a long time and now switching their registration. So it's not actually a net increase. I don't know. That's my question there. I don't have a good insight into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. I think we'll know. I want to see kind of how Rich Bearer's his numbers come in with Pennsylvania over the weekend. That'll kind of give us an idea. My early guess would be that Biden's going to be up, like I said, maybe 2 or 3 points, but I could be wrong. Anything's possible. When he did the Rust Belt poll, I think he actually went on record to say he thought, based on what he saw, that Trump would win it by 70,000 votes at the time. So I'd expect maybe some movement back to Biden. But again, I think it's going to come down to the turnout in these counties here. But we'll see. You know, the Republican and Bearer have tweeted it this evening. In 2016, the Democrats had an 11-point registration edge, and the turnout was, I think, D+3. It's now down to a 9-point registration edge. So can the Republicans keep it at D+3 or slightly less? We shall see. So I did want to mention that. So I think Pennsylvania is going to be the state on election night to really watch. But that could obviously change, being that, you know, we're still a month out. So I wanted to show that. I'm trying to think if I had anything else that I wanted to mention. You have anything else, Dane?
Do I have anything else this episode? I don't know. The Biden E question was really good from your wife, so kudos to her.
Kudos
to
Ashley, yes.
There's just so much going on. There's the VP debate tomorrow. There's Trump getting COVID. We didn't even talk about
coronavirus.
And it's just crazy. Like I can't, like, every day it's just tons of stuff. So who knows what will happen next?
Expect the unexpected, Dane.
Expect the unexpected entirely. I went on my Pennsylvania rant. That's my big thing about Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvanians are just a very elitist.
You're good
people.
For one an episode.
Yeah,
I ran about something.
That's not very value add, I don't think. maybe I should talk about the episode sponsor for today.
Yeah, go for it.
Our episode sponsor is. Oh, crap. Let me look around the room. I don't want to say the hotel because people will be able to zero in on where I am. Oh, geez. Oh, boy. Oh, no. Oh, I'm cracking under the pressure. Our episode sponsor is – oh, wait. Hold on. I got a bottle of water. Wait. Oh, okay. It's VP Vaza Purified Water because – when you're looking for water, only the most purified water will be the kind you want. So drink VP, Vaza Pure. They've sponsored this episode. The check is in the mail. They thought that this was a show. I don't know. They didn't think it was about politics in Northeast Ohio, or else they wouldn't have sent us the check. But we successfully lied to them, and they gave us a good sponsorship.
That's fair. But a couple housekeeping items.
I just want to say real quick, I was at a mall today and I saw a Casper store. And I was like, hey, thanks for sponsoring us. No, but they are a huge sponsor of this show. Everybody should know that Casper mattresses are, you know, only Republicans sleep on Casper mattresses and they only sell to Republicans. So, you know, I'm sure that they want to be associated. Their brand is going to sue us immediately after this episode.
They don't know what they're missing out on. A couple items that I wanted to mention real quick. October 12th, next Monday, Christina Hagen and Tim Ryan are going to be debating on 21 WFMJ in Youngstown. They'll be streaming that online. So that'll be interesting to watch. Governor DeWine came out and endorsed Christina Hagen today. And there's been a slew of attack ads by Tim Ryan. So I still think he would not be spending this money if this race wasn't single digits. I still maintain that. I think Christina Hagen still has a tough sledding to do, especially if Ohio's only plus, let's say, 4 or 5 for Trump. I think she needs Trump to have a good showing in Ohio, especially in her district, which I think it's possible, but we'll see. So I'm thrilled that they're actually debating. And so that's next Monday. And then secondly, to go along with that, we mentioned him last episode. We didn't think it was possible, but Ryan, it's Gerdusky, by the way, Dane. I watched the YouTube videos. It is Gerdusky. I want to say Gerdusky, but it's Gerdusky. Actually reached out to us and wants to come on our podcast. So I think it might have to do with Christina Hagen. I'll find out more and hopefully we can get him on. He's contacted me a couple times. So he has a new book out. I forget the title of it, but it's about populism in America. So
they're not listening.
They're not listening. Hill. Which, yes.
Buy it. It's a great book. I'm going
to
plug it.
I haven't read it, but so we'll try to work on getting him on. If you don't follow him, go and follow him at Ryan Gerdusky on Twitter. He's also on Facebook as well. He actually has a really good weekly kind of populist newsletter that he sends out through email every week that I encourage you to sign up for. I think there's some good tidbits of information there. So hopefully we'll get him on. But again, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. Eventually, we'd like to move this to YouTube. I think you could kind of get better stats and things like that, and the quality and all that would be better there. But for now, we'll try to just stream into Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope on Twitter. And again, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app, on social media, and just keep expect the unexpected over the next week. If anybody says they know how this election is going to go based on how things are on October 6th, they don't know what they're talking about, because there's going to be some more curveballs coming our way. That's my prediction for the end of this episode. Last words, Dane.
Two things. One is I agree. I'm not trying to say that Trump has lost it. I think it's a very volatile election. I just think he's down. That's very different.
And I agree 100%.
It's over. And two, I did drive around North Youngstown, and I was shocked, and I'm not, you know, this is something that comes up, shocked by the amount of Christina Hagen signs. You know, she's got these nice red signs with the white lettering, and it just says Hagen. And I saw tons of Christina Hagen signs, and I was like, whoa, there might be something here. I saw like 3 Tim Ryan signs. So if she doesn't win, she's going to come awfully close, because there seems to be a lot of genuine grounds up support for her. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed by that. Okay.
And I think what could play to her benefit is going to be that whole police issue, and how the some of the police chiefs locally, Youngstown, Struthers, kind of came after Tim Ryan. I saw she said she's distributed over 10,000 signs across the district, and I think it's obviously more than that, but there are a lot around town. I will say this, early on, the Trump sign lead in Mahoning was huge. It's narrowed quite a bit. I would still say probably 55-60% Trump, 40-45% Biden. They've come up quite a bit around my neighborhood. Some neighbors have put some Biden signs up. It's my part of the neighborhood. I'm without giving away. It's kind of an interesting, fascinating thing, seeing all the signs between Trump and Biden here. But Boardman's an interesting community, because it was Biden or Trump barely won it. I think it was like 49-48 in 2016. So as I keep driving around, I kind of keep a tally in my head, because I'm a bit of a nerd in terms of the signs, but I have an idea. So I still think Trump has a slight edge. It's obviously more as you go into this inner city aspects of Youngstown or closer to it, but way out in the suburbs, Canfield, especially Poland as well, I was surprised with the number of Trump signs, and then parts of Austintown. And I will say this, 46 in Austintown from probably Shields Road all the way up to Interstate 80. It's just a constant stream of Trump signs. And it's not like they're baby signs. These are monster signs along that stretch, and people decorating their homes. So if you're ever down this way in Mahoning County, Dane, come check out 46 in Austintown. You'd be surprised. So
You know, we'll have to meet up in person one day. I don't think I've seen you in real life since like 2002 high school, right? You know, one day we'll have to actually meet, you know, who knows? But yeah, I'll check out Boardman. Really adventurous place,
Boardman. Yeah. And one quick thing I see in the chat, Beth, who I used to work with, chiming in, that she says that in her drive through Western PA, you won't find many Biden signs, which I could believe. But again, registration in Lawrence and Mercer County has been very positive for the Republicans as well there. And she says how amazing how many Trump signs. But I think that's key. In I think how Western PA goes, you're going to see a similar thing along in Northeast Ohio and Mahoning and Trumbull. Because there was a time there Mercer was somewhat similar to Mahoning and Trumbull. It's definitely moved much more right now. So, yeah, fascinating things. And we'll follow up perhaps. Perhaps we'll try to get maybe an episode in if we can make it work sometime next week around these debates. Monday is going to be tough. And then I think maybe I don't know when the presidential one is. We'll try to make something happen though, because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe this week.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, excuse me. I will try to reach out to Ryan Grudusky as well and try to set something up with him. And also, before I forget, I'm remiss to forget. We actually were going to try to have Colton Henson on, who is a consultant. Worked the last few years in D.C. He's back in Ohio now. We were going to try to have him on the night. It just didn't work out at the last minute. So he does want to come on and talk about Ohio some more. So we will have him on before the election as well. So and final thing is early voting started in Ohio today. So if you don't want to wait until election day and you don't want to do the whole voting by mail absentee in Ohio, go to your local board of election and I guess one more thing. I am tracking absentee requests in Mahoning, Trumbull, and Columbiana County, so I'll keep an update on that to see if we could see anything that might hint as to where this election might be going locally.
You're a busy dude. You're busy. And you've got two kids.
I have two kids. Yeah, once the kids go to sleep, that's when I do this stuff. But I also have a big deadline coming up next week for work. But I'll get it all done. We'll find a way. You always find a way to get things done, right, Dan?
What about your poor wife? Do you give her any time, or are you just looking at election returns? Sorry, honey. You know, can't spend any time.
She watches some questionable programming at night that I'll just be on my iPad doing my thing, and I'm like, I don't know what she's watching. And so if she's tuning in tonight, she knows what I'm talking about. So
Goodness, that sounds very risque.
I wouldn't use that. It's disturbing programming. I wouldn't go so far as to say risque.
I can't spend time with you. I'm looking at the returns and like, you know, Noon Falls or Lordstown or election returns. That's, I guess it's our own. I don't know. Pray for the Metzingers, folks. Pray for the Metzingers. You know, there's more to life than looking at the absentee ballot requests of Trumbull County, Ohio.
I don't know what I'm going to do. No, election's over.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, everybody. Well, thank you again for tuning in, and please subscribe on the podcast. We'll have that up tomorrow morning for you. So when you're going driving into work, or when you're looking for something to do tomorrow at work, you want to listen to something, tune into us before you tune into somebody else. And tell your friends as well. All right, everybody.
Don't tune in anybody else ever.
Have a nice night. Take care, Dade.
Bye.